This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm, Zuji.com, an online travel agent providing flights and hotels bookings worldwide, Mint.com, personal budgeting and financial management software, and go to Webinar, unlimited webinars for one low rate. Go to ChinaMoneyNetwork.com and click on our sponsors links. Thank you, everyone, so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is returning guest John Wang, Director of Asian Equities and Portfolio Manager at Chicago-based Obervise Asset Management, a growth strategy investment firm focused on small and mid-cap companies. John Wang is the lead manager of Obervise China and Asia Opportunity Strategy. Previously, he was at Founders Asset Management, investing in the international small-cap stock sector, and a portfolio manager at the CVO Greater China Fund at OftBank. Today, he's talking to me over the phone. He is in San Francisco, and I am in Hong Kong. Here is our conversation. Hope you enjoy it.
Hi, John. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Your company, Obervise Asset Management, has an interesting history, being founded by U.S. Senator Jim Obervise in 1978. Tell us a little bit about the firm's roots.
The firm has been, focused on the U.S. domestic market initially, and then when Jim Obervise Jr., Jim's son, took over the business, he was intrigued with the growth of China back in 2005, and that's when we started the China Opportunity Fund, and we have not looked back since. After the China Opportunity Fund was started, we also expanded and started the International Fund as well as the Asia Fund.
For people in Chicago or that part of the country, a lot of people know Obervise as a diary product brand. Is that somehow connected with Obervise's interest to invest in the consumer product sector?
Well, the two companies are separate. They are separately run by different individuals. Jim Obervise Jr. Is the president and primary shareholders of the asset management company, and his siblings run the dairy business. So these two are completely separate. As you said, the dairy business is actually very well known in Chicago. The ice cream is, one of the best known brands. So yeah, if you ever in Chicago, do try the ice cream there. It's really good.
Okay, put another thing on my to-do list. So
yeah.
Back to the company, you manage Obervise Asia Fund and also the China Fund. Obervise China Fund has 221.8 million under management, and Asian Fund has about $6 million in assets. So that's out of the firm's total assets of $1.2 billion. So China is obviously an important strategy for the company. Give us a little bit more detail of the China Fund strategy.
Sure. Our strategy is very simple. We try to tap into the growth of the Chinese economy. And, of course, if you have been looking at China in the last 20-plus years or so, the growth in China has evolved. When I first started in the business back in the 90s, it was very simple to invest in China. All you have to do is to buy companies, typically Hong Kong companies with factories in southern China that make cheap products for Western consumers. And that has evolved. Maybe 10 years ago, starting 10 years ago, the easy way to make money in China is to buy copycats, typically students or people who work in the U.S. or study in U.S. before, and they saw some great ideas and they bring it back to China and then do exactly the same. So that was like 10, 15 years ago, and all you have to do is obviously to buy, copycats. Now, for example, back then you have Baidu, which is very similar to Google, and then, of course, more recently you have Youku, which is almost identical to YouTube. What we are focused on right now today is more on domestic consumption or consumption in China. I think that's where the growth is going to come from. And, obviously we are very positive about the emergence of the middle class in China. For example, today we have about almost three quarter of the population, 70% of the population that are considered middle class in China, and about 14% are considered upper middle class in China. We think that by early 2020, that number will grow to about 76% for middle class, and about more than half will be considered upper middle class. So the emergence of the middle class in China will definitely give us, you know, big impetus to the consumptions in China, and that's what we're focused on. And one sub-sector that we're really interested in is, of course, e-commerce in China. We think that e-commerce will continue to grow, and we are forecasting that it will grow by about 20% between now and about 2017, which means that the e-commerce sales will probably double between now and then. So we are definitely very positive about that sector. So, I mean, to summarize, I think the way to invest in China has evolved. I like to call it the three C's. The first C, obviously, is cheap labor, which happened about 20-plus years ago, and that's where you invest. The second C is copycat. That's about 10 years ago. And the third C, which I call consumption, is where we're focused on right now.
That's very interesting. Can you give us an example of that illustrates how do you put the strategy to work?
Well, before I go on to that, I think, you know, one thing about China that kind of in a way missed me is the question, why are Western investors so bipolar about China? Between 2005 and 2007, we have extreme euphoria about China, so a lot of money pouring into China. And compare that to today, when you know, regardless of what happens in China, regardless of what the positive things that are coming out of China, nobody wants to touch China anymore. I think, you know, this extreme euphoria compared to what we have today, I think provides a lot of opportunities for long-term investors to consider investing in China. I think that's the key, and we see a lot of good things coming out of China 5 to 10 years from now. And one of the things that I mentioned earlier, which is e-commerce, and one of the names that we like and has done very well for us is a company called Vipshop. It's listed in the U.S., and its ticker symbol is VIPS. Vipshop is a leading online discount retailer in China. It utilizes the online flash sales method, and it's focused on second and third tier cities. So the company has done very well in the last couple of in the last year or so, when it announced extremely good numbers. For example, the revenue grew by more than 145% last year to $1.7 billion, driven by growth in active customers and also increase in the orders. Despite the high valuations, we think that the stock is still relatively attractive, because I think there's still a lot of growth left in the company.
So if you're very optimistic about China's e-commerce sector, then aren't you also very bullish about some related sectors such as logistics, warehousing, and maybe some sort of like a convenience store pickup drop-off platform?
Yes. When we talk about e-commerce, obviously we look at the whole ecosystem. And like I said, besides companies directly doing the sales to consumers itself, we also have investment in logistic companies. Companies that provide logistics to these e-commerce companies, and we also have investing in companies that are the backbones of e-commerce or the internet in China. For example, we are investors of a company called 21VNet that has been one of our key investments in China, because we think that the growth of e-commerce and just simply the growth of internet data, mobile data in China will help this company going forward.
So from what you're saying, it sounds like most of your companies are U.S.-listed Chinese companies.
Well, we do have investment in the Hong Kong-listed Chinese companies. I mean, if you look at our portfolio, probably about a third are U.S.-listed companies, and the rest are all mainly Hong Kong-listed companies. So we have sizable investment in Hong Kong-listed Chinese companies. Besides e-commerce, the other factor that we're positive on is obviously clean energy, renewable energy. I think, you know, that's a factor that the government is very focused on. We believe that the government will continue to clean up the environment in China, and that means that a lot of money is going to be spent on the environment in the next few years. So there are going to be a lot of companies that will benefit from this. So we are obviously interested in that sector. So one of the names that we have, which is one of our bigger positions, is a company called China Everbright International. The ticker symbol is 257 Hong Kong. So this is a Hong Kong listed company. The company is involved in the investment, construction, and operations of environmental projects, including waste to energy and wastewater treatment. So this is a company that we have been long-term investors in, and it has done very well for us. I visited one of its treatment plant in the Suzhou last year, and the size of the operations just amazed me. And we think that with the growth of urbanizations in China, this company will continue to benefit with more projects coming in the pipeline.
I'm going to ask you more about this sector, but just a follow-up question about the e-commerce sector companies you were talking about. This year, we had JD.com going IPO on the NASDAQ, and also we had Jimei International also having done very well in their IPOs. Alibaba, of course, are going to do a U.S. IPO as well. So what's your sentiment or what's your assessment of the many e-commerce Chinese companies listed in the U.S. now?
Well, Alibaba has not gone IPO yet. Obviously, it's one of the big fish in China. You know, the key to identifying good opportunities to invest, of course, is valuation. And when we invested in Dipshop early last year, the valuation was really, really attractive, and that's why we bought them, and that's why we increased our positions. So, for example, JD.com, you mentioned, obviously, it has done very well since IPO, but its market cap is a little too big for us, and given this recent performance, I think it's better for us to wait and see how it performs, you know, after it announces its results.
You talked about valuations. If you look at the Chinese ADRs, the MSCI NASDAQ Golden Dragon Index is about at 19.7 times PE ratio. That's higher, but not too much higher than the average since 2006, which is about 15.3 times. And the NASDAQ average is about 18.8 times PE ratio. So just on the average term, do you think valuations are getting pretty reasonable now?
Obviously, valuations is a little higher than its peers and also compared to historical. But having said that, I think if you look at the valuations of Chinese ADR today compared to perhaps early this year or late last year, I think a valuation has come back down a little bit more you know, in recent months because of the volatility. But besides the PE, you know, we also look at the growth rate. And at the end of the day, I think what's important for us is a PEG ratio, which is PE over growth rate. And when we look at some of these companies, the PEG ratios remained relatively attractive for us. For example, I mentioned Dipshop earlier. Although the PE looks daunting, but the growth rate is just as, you know, as high. So if you look at that, then the PEG ratio is actually relatively attractive.
Because of the accounting fraud accusations that was very popular during 2011 and 2012, you know, investors sort of have a scar towards investing in Chinese companies. So nowadays, when you invest in a Chinese company, do you look at whether the company has gone on IPO in the U.S. directly or they have become public through a reverse merger?
Yeah, that's a very good question. If you look at our investments, we only invest in companies that we're very comfortable with. This means that we actually do our own due diligence. We go to the companies, we visit the companies, and we talk to the management, the founders, the CEOs, the CFOs. One of the key things about investing in many of these Chinese smaller companies is that we make sure that the founders have a substantial stake in the company itself so that their interests and our interests are aligned. So that's one thing. Obviously, like you said before, you know, a few years ago, there were a lot of reverse backdoor IPO, and those companies turned out to be frauds. We tend not to invest in those companies. All our companies are basically direct IPOs. They go straight to, you know, they do the IPOs directly, so we have not invested in those backdoor windows IPOs.
Is that a conscious decision that to avoid this type of companies?
Well, that's not really a conscious decision. So typically, when we invest in companies and when we talk to management, which is key for us, you know, most of the companies with good management typically, you know, do the IPO directly. And because of the fiasco a few years ago, many of these backdoor listed companies, I think their market cap and their liquidity has dried up. So interest in those companies have been obviously diminished.
There are about 186 Chinese ADRs, 64% of them listed on the NASDAQ. And you invest in small cap companies. Do you feel there are big enough pool of investable companies for you to find enough opportunities?
Yes, I think when we look at our universe, not just ADRs listed in U.S., but also Hong Kong listed companies, when we identify good companies to invest in, we tend to stay with them for as long as possible until obviously valuations become too rich. But otherwise, we tend to stay with them. So a lot of these internet companies that we invested in, we have been shareholders of them for many of them since IPO. So we continue to like them and we continue to stay with them.
What is the most difficult part about finding the right company to invest in your investment process?
Well, the key thing for us, obviously, is always finding the right management team. This is almost like venture capital, because when we invest in small companies, execution is very important. And to execute well, you need to have a good team of management.
Just want to touch a little bit on the Chinese macroeconomic environment. What do you think are some misinformed popular discussions today regarding China's macro condition?
The economic growth in China has slowed down in the last few years, and we think that it will continue to slow down. And one of the most obvious reasons is, it's the base. The base has grown to be so big now, it's almost impossible to grow at 10% anymore, right? But for us, that's not important. In the Overwise Fund, what's important is to identify sectors that continue to do well despite the slowdown. So whether the economic growth is going to be 7% or 7.5%, I think some sectors within the economy will continue to do well. If you look at the overall GDP growth today, you're going to miss out on a lot of opportunities because the GDP growth rate is comprised of the other sectors also, like export and infrastructure spending, which we believe going forward will not play as an important of a role in the Chinese economy.
Now, lastly, the Shanghai-Hong Kong Stock Connect program was announced recently. Do you see any potential opportunities here to benefit in a technical way?
Well, I think obviously it's going to help sentiment for many investors. And when fully implemented, I believe there will be a short-term technical positive move for the market, because we're going to see some Chinese investors who will be interested to invest in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong market is definitely more regulated and more transparent. So many of these retail investors who rely on, short-term trading may not benefit as well, and therefore may not be as enthusiastic about the Hong Kong market.
Overwise China Funds has returned 59% in 2013. What's your outlook for this year?
Well, we had a very good year last year, and the last couple of months this year has been more challenging for us because there were a lot of issues that were not related to China or not related to the companies that we invest in that have hurt sentiment. But we remain positive about the companies that we invest in. And I think if you look at the historical pattern, we think that the second half will be a much better half for the Chinese market compared to the first half.
And lastly, before I let you go, I do remember seeing an article where you said that you have invested in a Chinese toilet paper maker called Vinda. Why do you think the stock hasn't performed as well as you probably expected?
Are you talking about Vinda, V-I-N-D-A?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, we're no longer shareholders of the company. We actually sold our positions in the company last year. We sold our company positions last year, actually very early last year, after the company reported disappointing earnings. We're thankful that we're not shareholders anymore. But I think one of the reasons about why the company has not done well is, a couple of reasons. First, overcapacity, and I think demand for some of the products that you thought it would do well has not panned out, and the company also tried to diversify into other products But the delivery has been actually quite disappointing. For example, when the company decided to go into diapers, production has been actually delayed several times, and that has also disappointed investors.
What lessons, if there are any, that you learned from this example?
When we invest in the companies, we continue to talk to management on a regular basis. So after we invest in the companies, we always monitor the positions, and we always make sure that we have regular contacts with the management. So take, for example, the Vinda case, which we were positive about the company when we invest in, but after we invested in, and we continued our conversations and our dialogue with the management, and at some point we discovered that a lot of the things that we thought would happen did not happen. So at some point we have to make a decision that perhaps the executions was not up to what we thought, and that's when we make the decision to sell. That typically it's always better to sell early than to wait for the share price to recover.
Well, John, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Nina.